to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, September 25th, 2014. It's just before 3 UTC, a little later than we usually do it, by about an hour. But a little bit less than an hour. Mm. And did I say I'm Sam Minter? Yeah, I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Bo is with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
So we were just talking as we were going through the stuff. You know, obviously some big things have happened in the news, and we'll talk about the us bombing Syria, and we'll talk about some other stuff. But really, when we came down to, like, let's get a list of things to talk about.
And we weren't very excited about any of this crap.
Yeah, I do want to talk about the Syria bombing and stuff related to that, but we kind of covered that last week. You know, we were talking about ISIS in general, but we were talking about the whole situation, and, okay, this is just the continuation of that. I don't know, this other stuff, but, you know, so anyway, we're going to talk about us bombing Syria. There are a few little Apple things going on. We'll put them at the end, promise. There's a summit.
If we even get to them at the rate we're going.
Yeah. There's a climate summit thing going on in the UN, and of course there are all kinds of other speeches and stuff going on in the UN. There was a donors list for the Republican Governors Association that was leaked. Well, not even leaked. They had a bug on their website that let it out, right?
Yes.
Something like that. So it's not like somebody stole it and took it out. They just accidentally released it.
Oops.
And then the Apple stuff. So that's the basic agenda. Anything else exciting going on in your world before we jump into everything, Yvonne?
Exciting? I don't know. There's nothing really exciting. I mean, I think that there's just...
I'll mention one thing.
There's nothing exciting.
I'll mention one thing. This morning, it was the first really rainy day of the fall here in Seattle. And I saw the weather forecast. I knew it had been raining all night. And I said, you know, traffic's going to be a mess. I'm going to take the bus today. You know, so I just don't have to deal with, you know, the stop and go traffic for however long it's going to be. And I had an 8 a.m. meeting I was trying to get to. And normally, in order to get to an 8 a.m. meeting taking the bus, I have to leave the particular bus in question. I have to leave home just before 6:30 in the morning, because it's like a 10-minute walk to where the bus stop is, and then I take the bus and it gets me there in plenty of time before the 8 a.m. meeting. And then, like, if I'm a little bit later, like if I catch a bus, the next bus after that, I can still make the 8 a.m., but it's really tight, and I have to sort of walk fast once I get off the bus on the other end, right?
Okay.
And under normal traffic situations. And I'm like, you know, I should try to get out a little bit earlier, get one bus earlier than I would normally guess. So
if you're going to take a bus, if you're going to go and, like, leave before 6:30, what time do you wake up in order to try to accomplish that?
If I want to leave the house at 6:30.
Yeah. Say you want to leave at 6:30.
What time? I try to wake up at 5.
5. Okay.
I try to leave myself an hour and a half.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, the reality is, if I really crunch, I can go from being woken
up.
That's
the time that you would have to leave. Now, what time do you really wake up? I mean,
okay.
On.
So,
yeah.
About half of that hour and a half, I'm hitting the snooze
bar. Yeah, come on. Give me a break. Don't fucking. Look, I do the same thing. So give me a damn break. Okay.
Yeah. So most of the time, about half of that is hitting the snooze bar. And then that puts me behind, to actually make it, let's say, I can snooze for half an hour. Okay. If I snooze for 45 minutes, I'm really pushing it, and I'm probably not going to make it to leave at the time I target it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Although I can still make it at that point if I, like, skip a shower. But I don't like skipping my shower.
No. You should not leave the house skipping the shower.
Yeah. Like, I will only do that under the most extreme circumstances.
Exactly.
You know? So I try not to do that. You know? So...
So, I mean, you're going to miss a flight or something. Yeah, yeah. I've skipped the shower. Like, for example, last time I skipped the shower, it was actually about a couple of months ago that I was heading for a flight, okay, and I overslept. And I woke up, and I mean, look, the great thing is that usually when I go, I had set up the night before, I had my clothes all laid out, I had my bag all prepped, everything was just ready to go. Okay, all right. I mean, I left the toiletries, but they were organized in the bathroom. All I had to do was grab them, toss them in the back, go. And I woke up late, and I'm like, holy shit. So I just, I mean, I skipped the shower. Fuck it. Right, I'm like, screw this. I'm not going to make the flight, you know. And I got there. I dropped off the car. I didn't even wait for the guy to give me a receipt. I just freaking, like, dropped off the rental, just ran in, got there right at the cutoff, like, the cutoff was like I got there like 60 seconds before the cutoff.
Right.
So, I mean, I must admit that was very proud of myself that day.
There you go.
I mean, So anyway, skipping showers is bad.
To finish my story, yep. I did not skip my shower this morning, but I did hit the snooze bar a couple times too many, especially because I was thinking I don't want to leave the house at 6:30. I want to leave the house a little bit earlier than 6:30 because I know it's going to suck today, right?
Right.
So I ended up leaving the house at like 6:32 or something.
Okay, which that's not bad.
Which on a normal day would be absolutely fine. I would catch one bus later than the bus I really wanted to catch, but I'd still get to my meeting on time, or at worst I'd be like 2 minutes late and they'd still be setting up all the stuff anyway. It would be no big deal, right?
Right.
But this was not one of those days that was like a normal day. I got on the bus, and the total time, and keep in mind, the bus can go in the HOV lanes and stuff that I would not have been able to if I was driving myself. And if I'd left, I would have left at almost exactly the same time. I would have perhaps had a 5-minute head start on the bus because of, not having to wait for the bus at the bus stop, but I wouldn't have been able to do the HOV lanes. Anyway, from the time I get on the bus until I get off the bus, on a drive that in my car on a normal good day without bad traffic at that time of day is about an hour. With no traffic whatsoever, it's like maybe 40 minutes. But at that time of day, normally maybe an hour, maybe an hour and 10 minutes driving. And on the bus, more like 45, 50 minutes. My total amount of time sitting in the bus before I got off at my stop in the city was just 10 minutes short of 2.5 hours.
2.5 hours?
2.5 hours. It was two hours and 20 minutes on the bus.
Wow. What the hell happened? Well, why exactly again?
It was raining.
No shit. It's Seattle. Isn't that normal?
Well, it's the first rain of the season. And everybody gets all flustered, I guess. There were a bunch of accidents, bunch of water on the road, and people get freaked out and they don't plan for it.
Well, I'm going to guess that other people also got there late.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, I did not make my 8 a.m. meeting at all. I emailed and said, it ain't happening. I'm not getting there. And I'm not going to call in because I'm in the middle of a crowded bus.
Right.
And as it was, I had a 9 a.m. meeting that I just barely made it to.
Wow.
So anyway, it's like the point of this was just, we've talked before about my commute and how variable it can be based on what the hell is going on. Wow. And yeah, like I said,
that's brutal.
On a good day that I skip rush hour and I leave home at like 9:30 and I'm trying to get to work, at 10:30, it's smooth sailing 35-40 minutes in. On a day like today, leaving at sort of the worst possible time is like trying to get into the city for 8 or 9 a.m. 2.5 hours.
What's the distance traveled?
25 miles.
25 miles.
Yes, just about.
You know, I mean, my my commute when I had to drive to Miami regularly from my house was 52 miles each way. The longest it ever took was an hour and 40 minutes.
Right.
Ever. That's two and a half. That's whew.
Yeah, just under two and a half. Just under two and a half.
Damn. Anyway.
And like I said, that was on the bus. If I'd driven, it probably would have been worse.
God. Good Lord. Well.
I was not thrilled by this. I mean, I kept thinking.
Well, I would certainly hope not.
I kept thinking to myself, I'm actually glad I did not drive. Even though I missed my meeting, I was late. Nonetheless, I'm like, I'm sitting here on the bus. I'm reading. I'm listening to stuff on my headphones.
You didn't have a seat. I had a seat. Standing. Okay.
I had a seat. No standing. There were people standing.
But it wasn't you.
But it wasn't me. Actually, on the way there, I don't think there was anybody standing. So it was actually okay. But it is not a good day for the commute. But I am glad I chose to take the bus. And I tweeted anybody, if you follow my Twitter, I responded to a comment that one of the local things that does traffic, posted, for reference, Everett to Seattle normal is about 1 hour. It's now 2 hour 20 minutes. I responded back, I took the bus today because I knew traffic would be bad. Didn't leave early enough though. We'll be very late. Oh well. And then they responded back, even if you had left yesterday, it might not have been early enough. So anyway, it was a mess. Bring on the self-driving cars, as they say, or personal helicopters or whatever. Although, I'm not sure how I'd feel about a personal helicopter.
No, I'm okay with a self-driving car.
I know I'd crash the helicopter.
I'll get used to it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, let's face it, now that my wife actually back, after I had arrived, I did my race. My wife was a little bit like trying to retire me from racing ever again. Yeah. I can understand that. Why?
It's dangerous. You could get hurt.
Oh God, jeez. Well, okay.
All I'm saying is I understand the point. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, anyway, I think I've worked her enough that she convinced that she'll allow me to partake in the race again next year. So, what I was saying is about self-driving cars. Great. Well, I've got self-driving cars. I'm like, fine, whatever. I guess, it'll probably be a lot cheaper. Okay. All right. To have a self-driving car, I'm thinking fuel, insurance, all those costs. Whatever, whatnot. So, what the heck, got to keep a race car that I can only drive at a track and go around. It'll probably be a heck of a lot more fun than having to be bumper to bumper in a commute. So what the hell?
I saw someone pointing out the other day, too, that in something online, I don't even remember who it was, I apologize, that, one of the other implications of, fully-fledged self-driving cars nationwide, and the kind that Google's talking about, where it's not assisted driving, it's you sit down in the car and say, take me to wherever, and then you kick back and do your thing, is that, if done right, it'll completely kill short-haul air flights. Because there's no reason that the self-driving cars...
Oh, yeah, the short-hauls? Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Because there's no reason the self-driving cars couldn't drive at 200 miles an hour.
Hell, I go short haul. I freaking drive myself. I mean, for God's sake.
No, I know, but like,
I know a lot of people are dissuaded because of that. Oh, Jesus Christ, yeah. And then those people that don't do it because of that. I mean, because there's no point. I mean, right now, on a lot of short hauls, there is no point in taking a short haul other than just people like, I don't want to drive.
Yeah, well, and the point is they could beat it on speed, too, because, like, once you have the self-driving cars...
I beat it on speed freaking driving right now,
of course, there'll be this transition period where we're sticking to our old speed limits and stuff, but if you have an intelligent self-driving car on a road where most of the cars are self-driving...
You can get a lot faster.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when you take into account, like, all of the stuff on the plane of, like, you know, going through security, getting your seat, parking at the airport, getting out on the other side, doing this, it'd be faster. So, anyway, that wasn't even an intended topic, but, you know, traffic sucked.
Yeah, traffic.
Okay, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about Syria for a little bit. Back after this.
Information.
Okay, we're back.
I didn't want to forget because I didn't want to mention this. I did tweet this, but I'm still today still a little bit shocked about seeing the guy using a Motorola Razor, and not even like the black Razor or like the later Razor. It was the original silver Razor talking on the phone at a restaurant the other day.
So how old would this thing be at this point?
I mean, it's got to be like about 9 years old.
Okay.
It's a 9-year-old phone.
Yeah, there's somebody at work who still has a flip phone, and everybody makes fun of him for it. Like, because he's like the only one that doesn't have a smartphone.
There is a very, you know, famous player, football player, young guy, just recently drafted from college. He must be like 25 years old. Those of you who follow some Andrew Luck, okay, all right, you probably have no idea who I'm talking about, but they were showing pictures that apparently people he confirmed that yeah, he uses a pretty old flimsy flip phone.
Yeah, well, and you know, I my mom also uses a flip phone, does not want a smartphone, is adamant that she does not want a smartphone. You know, for a little while, her plan was up, or, you know, she's ready to renew, and she decided to go to month on her flip phone, despite, you know, us saying, come on, please, we'll buy you an iPhone. We'll buy it for you. It'll,
you know,
it's
I gotta
on us.
Admit,
we'll even
I'm
pay for the
at,
data plan. We'll pay for the whole damn thing. You know, but
I will
she's
admit,
like, no.
I'm looking at the pictures of that damn laser. That was a sexy looking phone. Okay, I mean, it really made a trend. I mean, people were talking about that, you know, when the Razor was launched, that it wanted, you know, people wanted a stylish looking kind of phone, which kind of like Apple then went and, you know, took that to a certain level. But it was one of the things about that. So it's just, but yeah, it looks cool, you know, still even today.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, some people don't want it for one reason or another. Who knows? Smartphones. Anyway, Syria.
Well, it was kind of. It did break a lot. Anyway,
Syria.
So, what happened? So
as was promised last week, when Obama said that we will go after ISIL wherever they are, including Syria, this week we started bombing Syria. Along with several other Gulf Arab countries.
Yep.
And we apparently gave the Assad government like a 1-hour notice and basically told them to keep out of our way.
And which they did.
Which they did. They've kept out of our way. And, you know, haven't really made a big stink about it.
I mean, Assad's got to be like giggling himself pink.
Because we're hitting the people who are his enemies, too.
Right.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, we're about to bomb. He's like thinking, he probably said some stupid thing. He's thinking in his mind, fire away! You know, hit him with all you got! Thank you!
Anyway, but we are not coordinating with them.
Oh, I know we're not, but what I'm saying is,
I know what you're saying.
It's like, what is he thinking?
Well, there's been an argument that his strategy all along has been that he would only attack the moderates to make it so that the West had the West's only choice was, basically him or the ISIL type folks.
I know.
And, so his strategy has basically been working. Now, what he probably hoped for is that we would at some point just say, okay, Assad, we'll work with you to get these guys because they're worse than you are. And we haven't done that.
We haven't done that, but still anyway, in effect, to be honest with you, I mean, the strategy still worked.
Yeah. There's the usual controversies, about how this is covered. Is it legal? Obama says that the authorizations for the use of military force in, 2001 and 2002 both cover this, and so he doesn't need anything more from Congress. He says under international law, it can be handled under self-defense, but not our self-defense, under Iraq's self-defense, and Iraq asked them to help them, so we're helping with Iraq's defense.
But here's the other thing. Apparently today, they went and they were talking about that, apparently that there was some kind of imminent attack, and that they attacked people who were planning the imminent attack. I don't know if you saw that.
This is the other interesting thing, because that's not ISIL at all. That's actually a group that is part of Al-Qaeda.
But that apparently was in ISIS territory.
No, it was not. We just took the opportunity that since we were bombing anyway, we would also bomb these other guys. But they're completely and totally unrelated.
Where were those guys?
They were further west in Syria, I think, if I remember right. Hold me to that.
We bombed Assad-controlled territory, or were they?
Neither. They were in their own controlled territory. There are all kinds of, these little things here. There are all kinds of groups holding on to different patches of territory, and this was a part of Syria that was controlled by Al-Qaeda groups.
Okay.
And so, completely unrelated to the ISIL guys, not only unrelated, enemies of the ISIL guys. Because Al-Qaeda and ISIL don't like each other at all.
God, love these
if you
guys.
Remember, the ISIS, ISIL, Islamic State,
whatever the fuck they're called,
they were originally part of Al-Qaeda, but
they thought Al-Qaeda was too warm and fuzzy.
Al-Qaeda, it's actually the other way around. Al-Qaeda kicked them out for being too violent.
Oh man.
And this is the whole thing. We're bombing this group, we're bombing that group, we're bombing this group for that reason and this group for that reason. And, while we're at it, let's go do this too. And a whole bunch of people said, hey, while we're at it, why don't we get Assad too? And, we're not doing that right now. But it's like, really? Come on. This gets into, the whole thing I was saying before about, okay, maybe all this will work. Maybe it'll work. I hope everything works and we get all the, wonderful results that we might hope for, but it just seems like this is just a huge morass and we can make a big show, but I don't know that what's the real effect going to be. And even if we squash the immediate threat from ISIL, which, by the way, part of what was interesting about that announcement of the other group is that in all of the statements about ISIL, the president has been very careful to say, ISIL is a regional threat, but is not an immediate threat to the U.S. For this other group they just bombed, he's like, yeah, they were an immediate threat to the U.S. Because they were planning to do something to bring down airliners or something. Although there have been some statements since then that says, well, they were thinking about it, but they hadn't actually gotten to the operational stage yet. So who the hell knows?
Who the hell knows?
But
exactly.
The bottom line is there in the week since we last talked, there were actually a bunch of articles talking about how, yeah, how little threat actually exists from ISIS outside of the immediate area they control, and how even they, although they make statements about global ambitions, they're clearly actually focused on things going on in their immediate region, and that's what they care about the most. Meanwhile, there's other groups, not just this other one we bombed, but a variety of other ones in various places across the world are more immediate threats. And it's like, so why are we concentrating on this right now instead of those, or are really none of them really that big a threat to begin with?
So should we just go on a worldwide bombing tour? Is that what you're saying?
Well, apparently that's what we're doing. I mean, another tweet related to the bombing tour that somebody, see if I can find it real quick. There we go. Ryan Liza posted this on the 23rd, so a couple days ago now.
Yeah.
Total, countries bombed, Bush 4, Obama 7.
Well, there you go.
So
progress. Oh, right. Wrong way. Oh, shit. Well, okay, let me see. So we bombed Libya.
Yeah.
Let's see. What are the other ones we bombed?
Let's see. Libya, Iraq? Yemen, Iraq, Pakistan, Yemen. Sudan, Somalia, I believe. That's up to 6, and I could be wrong on Somalia. I'm gonna lose it here. I can't even count.
Well, the thing, but I'm like thinking, but probably in the last 20 years, I'm thinking that probably somebody bombed more countries, or probably Clinton.
Well, Clinton bombed a few. Yep. I don't know his number.
He took over the Somalia thing.
He got Kosovo, Somalia, Iraq as well.
The whole Yugoslavia. He also
did something in Sudan.
Yeah.
I mentioned Kosovo, yeah.
Yeah, but not just Kosovo. I mean, he had bombed Serbia. I can't remember he bombed Bosnia, but Serbia as well. I mean, shit. I mean, I don't know. We've done a lot of bombing.
Yes, we have. So, you know, I mean, like we said before, it's not like this is new behavior. It's not like Obama's doing something unprecedented here.
It says here, Bosnia 95, Somalia 94, Iran 98, Sudan 98, Afghanistan 98, Yugoslavia, Serbia in 99. Man, that's a long list. Fuck.
Yeah.
Jesus. Kuwait. So we'll go back before that. Kuwait in 91, Iraq in 91, Panama, Libya in 89. We bombed Iran in 87 and 88. Reagan did?
Shit. We bombed them? I don't know.
That's what this list says.
We shot down that plane.
Okay, that may count. Okay. All right. There you go. Nicaragua, El Salvador, Grenada, Lebanon. I mean, Jesus.
See, now you're getting into ones where it's indirect, like, supporting rebels and that kind of stuff.
No. I think we actually did bomb some of these.
Anyway, I mean, we're getting pretty far from the point
here. Anyway, well, all right, so...
Everything happened is basically as has been expected. The only thing that surprised me at all so far is how little, pushback we've gotten internationally from anybody. I mean, like even Russia and Syria aren't putting up any serious opposition to what we're doing. They're like, okay, fine. Because one thing everybody does seem to agree is, the people we're bombing are bad guys. There's nobody really on their side.
Yeah, I haven't seen anybody really jumping up and down and really saying, that they really, these guys are warm and fuzzy and we like them.
Yeah, I mean, you've essentially, this is the interesting dynamic where you've got, like, you know, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Israel, and Russia, all agreeing, basically, you know, that, oh, okay, that they, those guys suck. Yeah, go ahead and kill them.
Oh, gosh. Well, I, you know, I don't like this whole worldwide bombing tour thing, but I don't know. I mean, like I said, we keep doing it.
We keep doing it. We'll see. I still remain fairly pessimistic that this is going to end up as, you know, with results that we're all happy with. And, you know, people say, well, what's the alternative? And I honestly think that doing nothing is an alternative we should be considering more seriously than we do. Like, that a lot of these things, you know, would just burn themselves out if we ignored them. Whereas if we dump weapons into the area, if we bomb them, we just fan the flames of the conflict. If not immediately for this round, then for the next round further down the road. Now, having said that, not everything burns itself out. Some of these things actually do grow and become worse over time. But it seems like, especially when you have these super self-destructive type things, at some point they collapse under their own weight. But sometimes it takes a long time. Like the Taliban were showing no signs of collapsing before we went in and kicked it. So,
right.
You know. Ah, what the hell? Okay, let's take a break.
I'm breaky.
We'll be back after this. Okay, here we are. Yeah, tell me about this donor thing, because I noticed the headlines, but I really didn't read beyond the headlines. So, what happened?
A whole list of the. Okay, let me pull up. I had the list actually in front of me. Hang on. What happened to this thing? So basically, somehow they made some kind of a stupid error in their computer system, and they revealed this list.
This was the Republican Governors Association.
Yes. Okay. And it talked, you know, and it had, what it revealed was the kind of money the different companies were paying for the kind of level of access that they would get. Okay, all right?
Right.
So,
I should say, it just happens that it was the Republicans leaked at this point. I am sure that if you had a similar leak from the Democrats,
well, actually, they found one for the Democrats. So they have this most elite group known as this is not a Republican thing. Okay, all right, I'll be clear about this.
That's the point I was making.
This is the money in politics thing. You would see, not Republicans.
The point I was trying to make is if you had the same kind of leak from the Democrats, you'd see the same kind of thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think that there is information here about that. So for example, they had this most elite group known as the Statesmen. I'm reading this from a New York Times article called GOP Error Reveals Donors and the Price of Access. The statesman whose members donated $250,000. Okay, not a small sum. These included Aetna, Coca-Cola, ExxonMobil, Coke companies. Shocker. The lobbying arm of the highly political Coke Industries, Microsoft, Pfizer, United Health Group, and Walmart. For $100,000, the cabinet level included Aflac, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Comcast, Hewlett-Packard, Novartis, Shell Oil.
What did it get for this?
What?
What do they get for these
loans? Apparently, they get just, you know, board members receive two tickets to an exclusive breakfast with the Republican governors and members of their staff, three tickets to the Governor's Forum Series, where a group of 5 to 8 governors discuss the best policy practices from around the country in a particular topic, and a D.C. discussion breakfast series, amongst other events. And then then there was some additional stuff, you know, so now, and stuff. And so it's access. Basically, yeah, it's access.
It's access, but also...
The more money you pay, the more access you get.
But you also expect some indebtedness here. I mean, because obviously they're not really just playing for a one-hour breakfast where they can talk to the guy. Well, they
will not say that, obviously.
No, no, but what...
I mean, you know, it would only be reality.
Only be worth the dollars we're talking about.
If in addition to that,
you sort of expect to be able, you expect to be able to say at that breakfast, "Hey, I gave you $200,000. What are you going to give me?"
Hey, you know what? Listen, if you paid $250,000 to go and eat with one of these bozos and basically sat down at a meal and said, "Hey, I need your help with this and that," the guy just said, "Hey, fuck you." I don't think that that's very effective.
And you probably wouldn't get the next $250,000.
Exactly right. I don't think that would contribute more money. Okay. All right.
I mean, and there are all kinds of rules that they can't actually be quid pro quos and things like that. But come on, we all know.
Yeah. Aetna actually went and, like, for full disclosure, went and said donors refuse to comment on their memberships, but those who would speak more broadly to said they also given to Democrats. Cynthia Michener, a spokesman for Aetna, pointed that the company gave both $300,000 to both the Republican and the Democratic Governors Association last year.
Yep.
So, I mean, they're
very few companies who do this kind of thing, and most of them, you know, it's often not the company directly. The company sets up a pack or whatever, and they donate through the right. pack, and yeah, there are all kinds of legal intermediaries. But bottom line is all
to make me give to one of those packs. I freaking refused. I was like, "Fuck you." I'm like,
geez. Yeah. Anyway, all of these companies, you know, almost all, unless you're like a Hobby Lobby or something, you're given to both sides.
Yeah.
Because you want to put money in the hand of every politician who could potentially make a decision in your favor or against you.
Exactly right. And I guess that's just the whole thing about just, you know, how much money there should be in freaking politics. I mean, it's just, I mean, I don't know.
And you know, I've said before on things like Citizen United, I'm actually very... to me, like I actually agree with things like Citizen United that say money is a form of speech, et cetera, that, and I don't want government involved in restricting how people can spend money on political issues. Cause I think actually of all forms of expression, political expression is the most important. However, where I would solve these problems is on the flip side of it. In that, you know, I would say spend all the money you want on all of these kinds of issues, blah blah blah, but you know, we could potentially do things with very strict laws that govern political actors and forcing them to recuse when they have conflicts of interest, or severe penalties. You could also do things with matching that says, okay, fine, if you want to spend $25 million promoting, you know, cause X, that's fine, but there's some sort of federal matching or something like that that says, okay, you spend that $25 million, there's automatically $25 million going to your opponent to keep it even. You know, and there are all kinds of weird things on that, on how you balance that off. So I'm not sure that's the right way to go.
But here's the thing, a lot of these are not for one or the other. I mean, they're giving money to both.
Oh, I know. And in this case, in this particular kind of case, the main issue is essentially what's happening is bribery. You're just hiding it behind layers. And how do you... And I don't think the answer is to criminalize the people who are giving the money. I think the answer is to criminalize the actions that the elected officials may take based on that. Now, how do you do that? I don't know. That's hard. You know, especially since, of course, Congress would have to make the laws governing themselves. And, of course, they're never going to do that in a way that's harmful to their own interests. And it's good for them to be able to take money like this. And, you know, I've said Congress, same kind of thing goes for governors and other elected offices. Fundamentally, the politicians decide on the rules that govern themselves. So you're never going to get rules that are really harsh on the politicians in the absence of major scandal that reveals something untoward that nobody can ignore. Right. And, you know, but my bottom line on all of this stuff is I get very antsy about anything that tries to regulate political expression. And by political expression, I include not just speech, not just print, but also spending money on things. However,
do you think a corporation should be defined as a person for speech purposes?
I don't think the corporation should be defined as a person for speech purposes. However, a corporation is an agglomeration of people that can express the interests of people. So I don't see it mattering one way or another that it's a person. I still think it should be able to, participate in the political process. No, I think that
the companies should not be allowed to donate money as companies. Mm. I think that, hey, you want individuals, the company to donate then money, that's fine.
Can do it.
Yeah.
I can sort of see that, but at the same time, I recognize that fundamentally, a company is just an organization of people.
But a company is an organization of people, but especially public companies, most of the funds come from stockholders.
Yes.
Okay. And those people that are executives of the company, whatever, for the most part, own a very small portion of the stock. Right. Okay. For the most part. Okay. I'm not talking Larry Ellison or other people.
I would agree with it. I would agree with a regulation that said something along these lines, that companies can give all they want, but it has to be approved by a majority of the stockholders for each and every donation.
That would be interesting. Interesting. But of course, that gets the micromanaging stuff.
Yes, I mean, let's face it. But I think fundamentally the thing that has to be addressed here is not the money itself. It's the corruption that results from the money. And people are so scared of the word corruption. You don't hear the word corruption in these conversations most of the time. But that's what we're really talking about. The problem here, you know, is not, okay, corporations have too much influence. No, the problem is, the corporations have a bunch of influence. But what's the problem? The problem is the damn elected official is corrupt as hell and doing what the corporations want because they give him money. The problem is that you're successfully buying off the politician on one issue or another. And of course, it's hidden behind layers and layers and layers of deniability. But in the end, you almost never see a politician vote against the interests of, you know, major donors.
Yeah. Well, I don't...
And you can't just say that, well, it's because their views naturally supported that major donor, because as you said, the donors give to everybody. And
exactly.
And very often, if you like look at sort of the core stuff that person is doing, you could be like, well, you know, you used to, years ago, before you were elected, go on and on about this or that.
Isn't there a few countries that have just completely public funding for these damn campaigns?
That does exist. And there's some issues with that, too. But that is one approach that is out there, certainly, that you have some sort of petition process or something else to reach a minimum threshold. And if you hit that minimum threshold, you get public funding.
And the campaign are shorter and stuff, and you know, and it's like,
honestly, we've been campaigning for 2016 since the day after the 2012 election, even though it doesn't move into full gear for another, you know, month or so, a little more than a month. Lots of these countries, you know, the elections are called, a few weeks before the election is going to happen, there's strict rules on campaigning and when it can happen and when you can't do it and all kinds of stuff. I feel very hesitant about that kind of structure, though. I was just reading about some country or another where, you know, it's illegal on election day to do any activities whatsoever that may sway somebody's opinions in the voting booth. You know, okay, come on. That's a little ridiculous. You know, I think political expression is one of the most important rights, and we shouldn't be messing around regulating it. However, again, there are all kinds of places where it's obvious that there's out and out corruption involved in the system, where the people that are elected into office are not making some sort of pure evaluation of, here, based on my ideology and my knowledge of the facts and everything else, this is what I think is the right thing to do. No, they're doing, well, you know, that might be the right thing to do. However, I need to think about my donors, and my big donor wants this, and if I go against them, then I'm going to have trouble getting reelected. So, okay, even though maybe that's not quite the right thing, I'm okay with that because, you know, doing that will keep me in power longer, and maybe I'll do other good things because I'm in power. I mean, that's how people justify these kinds of things to themselves. But at the same time, they're you know, rolling over to whatever interest was paying them the most effectively, whether it's through intermediaries or whatever. And you end up with a mess. I mean, you could even argue that, and people have, that even worrying about being reelected is itself a distortion. That, you know what, and that we need, you know, single term limits for everybody, so that, you know, once they're in, they make the decisions as in as pure a way as possible, without trying to worry about raising money for the next election or even pissing off the voters.
No, I hear you, but I don't know. That's pretty extreme. I mean, I guess my thing is that I don't think you can get all the money out of this, but I also think that, I mean, the current limits and the things that are being done right now, it's just, we're in the wrong place right now. It needs to, you know.
I can agree. Even if I don't know for sure what the solution is, and I don't, even if I had an idea of a perfect solution, I don't see a good path from here to there. But I think, you know, almost anybody would agree that the system we have today, as it exists today, is broken in many different ways, where yes, the incentives are all screwed up, so that the politicians, a significant portion of the time, aren't really working in the public interest directly, or even in, you know, in furtherance of their own pure sort of ideological point of views. It's all distorted by all of these factors. And, you know, as we wrap up the segment, I just want to put a plug in for my favorite proposals on this again, which is, you know, get rid of elections entirely and pick public office holders by lottery.
Yes, of course. Yes, I forgot the lottery proposal. Absolutely. Yeah.
And to eliminate the influence of it, you sequester them for their whole term.
We're going to be sequestering them too.
You just, like, it, for congressmen, for instance, you just build a dorm right there on the grounds of the Capitol. They're not allowed to leave for 2 years.
No. Oh, boy. That'll be interesting. Anyway, all right.
Well, see, I have a real problem with making the public at large give up their rights, but I have no problem
having Congress give up theirs. Elected officials, screw those guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, all right, great, beautiful.
But I would pay them well as well to sort of disincentivize people saying, if you do the right thing for me, you got a big prize when you get out. So I would pay them very well. And so it'd be like winning the lottery. You get to be a congressman for 2 years or a senator for six.
Oh, boy.
But you get a big wad of cash. But the flip side is, you know, you have to
you're living in a dorm for like 2 years. It's like the biodome. Yeah. You're like, what the hell was it? That those guys that lived that dome.
Yeah, the biodome. The biodome. Yeah. Yeah. And you have to live in a dorm with Strom Thurmond or something.
Oh, gosh. Well, there are apparently a lot of female, you know, senators and other stuff, so apparently there'll be some entertainment.
Well, and if you were picking by lot, you'd have a pretty good 50-50 ratio, most likely.
Yeah. So that wouldn't be too bad. Okay. All right. Well, okay. Let's take a break.
Let's take a break. We'll be back after this. Okay, we're back. So let's, you know, I think we should just make this the last segment. Yes. We've actually held pretty good. Our segments have been just about 15-minute segments. So
yes, well, especially when we're kind of
the last one was like 16, but whatever.
Okay, yeah.
So in any case, global warming, they're having a summit. I've stated my view before, which is no matter what they do and how much they talk, they're not going to do jack shit. Let me not put it that way. Things will happen, but according to every estimate I've read, none of the efforts that are being seriously contemplated by anybody are anywhere near enough. And I do believe the science on this. And you know, okay, there's a small chance the science is wrong, but we have to base decisions based on the best information we have right now. And the best information right now says that there is human caused global warming. It's fairly significant. And if we continue burning fossil fuels at the rate we are, we're kind of screwed.
Can I be honest? I think I do believe that everything that you're saying is correct. If everything would stay status quo, I think that technology will change faster.
Well, and see, here's the thing: is the question is, does it change fast enough? Because basically, in order to avert sort of the worst case scenarios, and there were a number of graphs that came out this week in conjunction with this, showing a number of possible scenarios for where we'd end up, and basically to get in any of the scenarios that does not cause major disruption, to human society, we need to essentially not just the rate of growth, but the actual amount of burning of fossil fuels has to peak within the next few years and start going down dramatically. Not just slow down in growth.
But I'm not sure which year it's going to happen, but I think that within the next 20 years, it's going to happen.
And I think the answer is 20 years is too long.
Too long for what? For no change? Change is going
to
happen.
No. Okay, to have change less than, like, I think I wish I had the graphs in front of me. To have change of a magnitude that could be easily absorbed without massive disruptions.
Oh, there will be disruption. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is that there's one thing about being disruption and the other one being like, you know, like we're going to freaking like.
Like the one quote in the New York Times is the path that we are currently on for the last few years, even if we assume that reductions start kicking in, you know, over the next 10, 20 years, leads us in a path to the New York Times' quote was incompatible with human society as we know it.
I happen to just think that technology is moving and price of certain things is moving quickly enough that there's going to be a lot of disruptions like happen quickly. And sometimes tech disruptions happen in times and ways that we don't expect.
Well, and here's the thing that my main point is always on this kind of stuff. I think it is unrealistic to assume that the direction that some of this will happen naturally, of course. And I'm not in favor because I just don't think there's any political reality to it of sort of draconian laws cutting carbon emissions.
I totally agree.
I think where the research has to happen is sure we want to have research on efficiency and alternative fuels and those things are increasing their pace, absolutely. There's an argument that it's not happening fast enough, but I think where we need to be concentrating is actually on climate engineering to try to actively reverse these effects. So
things that'll pull carbon out of the air. You're making that too complicated. Listen, I'll give you one example. I think that one of the biggest changes going to happen in the next 10 years okay, major disruptor, is what I'm seeing with the price of solar-generated energy. Okay, all right? If you look at the price of solar right now, it's dropping so quickly that within the next 5 years, my belief is that it's going to be a tipping point for most households to go and say, why the fuck am I paying a utility? I need to put, like, let me put solar panels right now, and I can generate my own electricity, and I don't need to pay for this shit.
And speaking of laws and bot congresspeople and things like that, I was reading a few weeks ago that there are a number of states that are in specifically in reaction to these trends are actually putting laws on the books that require you to be hooked to your electric grid.
You know, but the thing is that this is the one thing that happens, that if you generate more electricity, like in the state of Florida,
the utility is
required to buy your electricity.
No, the states that are doing this kind of stuff are also pushing back on those kinds of things as well, because basically what they're worried about, it is now becoming feasible in many places and starting to be economical to not even do the selling back stuff, but be completely off grid.
Those laws are not going to last.
I agree.
I think these are
temporary speed bumps. The pressure will eventually go against that.
The pressure is going to be too great. Okay, because I did the calculation. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking about doing
it. I remember you speaking about this in regard to your place.
It's our condo, but I actually found out that quicker to do, like right now, my parents' house, which I'm actually seriously considering. I got to go call one of these guys because I think it's already economically viable for me to just fucking take the house off the grid. Period. Done. I'm with the tax incentives and the other stuff and whatever, I should just take the damn house off the grid.
Agreed. And so, I see a lot of these things developing. But again, like, I think you're going to get sort of the natural incentives for a lot of the things you're talking about. Like, as the price of oil goes up, and it you can artificially make it go up higher, but even naturally, the price invariably has to go up because fundamentally you're burning a non-renewable resource. So eventually the price is going to go up. It's only a matter of time. So as that happens, the economics change on all of these alternative fuels, and you are going to have development there. The question is only, is it fast enough? But what I'm saying is the other area where you're probably not going to see as much sort of independent, naturally occurring research and development is on, things to, say, massively scrub carbon out of the air. Or change reflective properties of clouds so that you counteract some of these environmental effects. And of course, there are risks to some of these geoengineering things too, which is why you have to be careful and you have to do lots of research and we have to get started because it's a long way away, some of these things. But I think we're silly to ignore that part of the equation. Well, and so far, the main thing is people have said basically, we don't even want to talk about that side because that's highly risky and so we want to concentrate on changing people's behavior, reducing emissions, things like that, because we know how that would work. But the problem is you're asking people or forcing people in some cases to cut back on things that don't have an immediate benefit for them.
Here's the thing a lot of those projections are almost like if technology and things are status quo. And one of the things that we were talking about earlier in the show was about the autonomous driving cars, right? Okay. Yeah. You talked about when you had your trip. Look, I think those cars are going to be here, before my son gets to have a driver's license at the rate it's going.
And that changes a lot of these dynamics.
When you're talking about that,
cars, trucks, et cetera, significant portion of emissions.
Absolutely.
I mean, there are all kinds of other things too. Like, they're not the biggest, but they are a significant chunk.
If you look at in the United States, the biggest sources of emissions, your home, your car, air transportation, for example.
Yeah.
If I go, for example, a great autonomous cars like we were talking about that all of a sudden start killing demand for short-term air transportation.
And another big source is power plants, which, as we were just talking about, if you take your houses off the grid and use solar,
shut down the damn power plants.
Right.
There's
a lot of stuff here, and in general, I don't see Yeah. I look at all of these things where people are trying to create massive government intervention to solve it. And, you know, and this is not on my part a philosophical, you know, government is always bad kind of thing, although they do tend to screw up these kinds of things whenever they try it. But on a more practical purpose, I just don't see any of these countries, including our country or any of these other national, you know, China or Russia or any of these guys, getting their acts together and actually implementing anything that was significant enough to make a big difference.
I gotta be honest, the Chinese are extremely interested in doing stuff
They are pushing towards some more natural stuff. They're going slowly too, but they are being aggressive there.
Yes.
The only reason they're going slowly is because they have so much momentum to turn around. But, you know, I see the only ways that are actually hopeful out of here are either natural market solutions like you're talking about, where, you know, it's not a massive government intervention. It just happens because the prices change and the incentives change on their own and technology improves. Or like I said, I think it does make sense to have some government involvement in that, you know, we should be thinking about the plan B. We should be thinking about the plan B. If everything goes to hell and we start to make the world uninhabitable 100 years from now, we should be thinking about the technology to actually like do geoengineering stuff to reverse some of that. And we've talked about some of it before. I've always joked about set off a bunch of nukes and start a nuclear winter, set off some volcanoes. There are all kinds of things that have various scales that you could think about that all have their downsides as well. But if your alternative is an uninhabitable planet, you start thinking about some of those things. Okay, now we're a long way from that kind of stuff.
We're a log work. I think
that, you know, we should have two prongs. We should be seriously thinking about that kind of research as well, in terms of, okay, if everything goes to hell, how do we fix it? And then also think about, let's make the cars more efficient and let's get solar power going and let's try to actually get nuclear fusion working, because if nuclear fusion actually worked, it would solve lots of this stuff too. You know, there are all kinds of things that we could be doing. But I just think, don't neglect geoengineering. Geoengineering is an interesting plan B that we should have in our back pocket. And nobody's really, there's some little efforts here and there, but nobody's really treating that as a serious avenue of investigation.
Okay. Well.
And, you know, it all comes back to, I just want to nuke Antarctica. You know what? That's really what it all comes down to. I have a thing against penguins.
You know, I got told that most penguins last week actually live in warm weather.
Well, they live in the warmest part of Antarctica, for sure. And some of them, and there are populations that are actually out of Antarctica in the Galapagos and in South Africa as well.
Yeah, so I heard.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that's enough for that topic. We're about to wrap it up, but I just want to say to the iPhone, the two things that happened, there's people are complaining that they can bend their iPhone 6s with their hands or by putting them in their pocket and sitting down. What do you think?
I think we should call it a night at this point.
Okay. And then they released an iOS update that bricked some people's phones, specifically people with iPhone 6s. I think that, you know, I don't know. I don't know how malleable these things are. I presume they do bend. But on the other hand, you know, if it's really delicate, you put a freaking case on it and move on.
It's
you make things thinner and thinner and thinner. Eventually, they'll bend.
And lighter and made out of aluminum. I mean, it bends. I mean, they'll break. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, you know, we were talking about durability of phones before. We're talking about your Trio and how many times you broke one in your pocket, for God's sakes. Yeah. How many times didn't I crack a cell phone? I've seen plenty of videos of people testing them. I mean, it takes quite a lot of effort to bend it.
But it can be done.
But it can be done. Yeah, I mean, you know.
And the question is, would you trade off, you know, an additional millimeter of thickness to make it a little bit sturdier? I probably would, actually. And I would, even more so than that, I would trade the additional millimeter for a bigger battery.
87% of people, I looked up the stat, 87% of iPhone users put a case on it.
Yes.
So if you add a millimeter and a case, that gets annoying. I mean, if 87% of people are putting a damn case on it, then, well.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I did get to touch an iPhone 6.
I actually went to an Apple store to look at it. I liked it very much.
Did they actually have it in stock now?
Yeah, they did when I went to I just decided I'm not buying a phone like right now. That's all. I mean, I got one. Mine's a year old. I typically keep them for 2 years.
Yep.
I mean, the only tempting reason why I had to buy the new one was to get the 128 gigs. I may still do it sometime before the end of the year, but I was in no rush. I was near a store. It wasn't very crowded.
No,
I just decided to take a look at it. I liked it very much.
At some point when it's not crowded anymore and blah, blah, well, honestly, when I'm there.
Well, I actually went to an AT&T store instead of an Apple store, and they had
The next time I'm at an Apple store anyway, I'm certainly going to play with them and see. I mean, my current thoughts are, this is part of Apple's problem, too, when they do last. I mean, mine is 2 years old now. I'm eligible for an upgrade now. But it's right now, it's still doing everything I need, and it's working. You know,
which is my point, because I read an article, somebody complaining about this damn phone, the 5 or the 5S. Well, they bent, and I don't know, whatever. And I'm like, well, look, you're Mr. Destroyer of phones, and your phones lasted 2 years.
I think I might have had it replaced once, but
but it wasn't because you bent it.
Oh, no, it wasn't bent. I probably did something else. I don't know. Honestly, what'll probably happen is I'll replace it when it breaks.
Yeah.
I mean, unless I get really antsy about
something. I don't even have a case on my phone, for God's sakes.
I know you don't use cases, and I always use a case, but
yeah, I am in the minority. I know.
I do have a little bit of gadget lust. It looks nice. It's a nice new thing. It's got
some, nice.
I'm two generations behind now. I'm missing a few features, but I don't see me running out together in the absence of, you know, something happening to this one.
I have a guy I know at the office. Okay, he used to work for me for a while, and the guy has had all the previous, like, Galaxy S2, S3, S4, whatever. But I will tell you one thing. I don't know what the deal is with him and those damn phones. None of them has lasted with the screen uncracked for 3 months. I mean, he's nice. Cracked. I will take the blame for one of them.
You did
we were having a drink at this place called, I don't know, probably seen in some movies, called the Vizcaya Museum and Gardens. It's in Miami. And so we were over there at an event, and he was standing in front of me, and I waved my hand. He had his phone in his hand. I hit his hand. His fucking phone fell right there and cracked the screen right there. I wanted to kill myself.
Very nice. Anyway,
I haven't cracked my own fucking screen. I cracked somebody else's fucking phone.
I did not install 8.01 while it was out. I haven't even installed 8 yet because, as I said, I am being stubborn and waiting for the phone to offer it on its own.
It's probably a good thing. Look, it worked fine. I mean, I have it. It worked fine. There's only one bug, which I actually wanted to get from the bug fizz for 8.0.1, that there's some issue with accessing pictures in, like, third-party apps.
Yeah.
Like,
they listed that.
I did notice that. Instagram can't really access them too well, but that was about the only thing. I mean, everything else that I've noticed is it's nice. I mean,
I'm sure they'll release 8.02 very shortly with a fix for whatever was causing the problem.
I mean, this thing with bricking stuff, I mean, for God's sakes, you remember, you remember what was that Apple TV update a while back that bricked the people's Apple TVs?
I had an Apple TV bricked by an update that I had
by to, an update.
I had to do something with attaching it to my computer via USB to install something in order to fix it, and which I did, but it was a major pain in the ass, and a non-technical person would not have accomplished.
So this is what happened today with the release of it. It's not exactly X-Men. I mean, people are making, like, oh my god, it's like, oh gosh, I mean, really, guys? I mean, not the first time.
No, it's not. But people have pointed out that this is this has not been the smoothest couple weeks for Apple that they might have hoped for, between, you know, starting with the live stream glitches on their announcement, then everybody being pissed off about U2, then the phones getting bent, then releasing an update that bricks phones.
Well, let's okay. First of all, very few people really that buy the phones were watching the
launch. No, I know.
No, but it's just
it's a PR thing.
The whole U2 thing.
All of these things have more of a PR impact than they have an actual impact.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I guess it's like every year it's just even more and more attention to everything that happens, I guess, at Apple. I mean, I don't know. You know, look, Samsung had a launch event for one of their phones that was like a freaking disaster. I mean, I remember that there were like people like, I mean, it was one of the most comedic, but in terms of bad events to launch. They had some guy walk off stage not wanting to talk about some of their stuff, for example, whatever. And I'm like, you know, it's not like people are going and like, you know, taking Samsung to task. I mean, but I guess that they expect so much perfection from Apple and everything they do that it's just like, I don't know. It's just, you know, it's good. I mean, but that's the attention you get from being, I guess, now the largest computing company in the world. Exactly.
Yeah, often on the largest company in the world, right?
And often on the largest company in the world by stock market value, too. So there you go.
Anyway, yeah. We're done. Thank you for listening to us, everybody. It's been another exciting week. As usual, email me at ablesmay@ablesmay.com, or you can contact us on Twitter. I'm at ablesmay. Yvonne is at IMBo. We had our listener, Bruce, tweet us again about last week's show, talking about backing up heads versus computers versus stuff.
It was creepy. Yes, it was.
Yes, we always appreciate the feedback. Tell your friends to listen too, and have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.